Welcome to the 27th Annual Executive War College, produced by the Dark Intelligence Group, April 27th and 28th, 2022, in New Orleans. The title of this presentation is Using Artificial Intelligence in Three Dimensions: Daily Lab Operations and Patient Services, Integration and Interpretation of Data, and the Coming AI Revolution in Digital Pathology.
And what I'd like to do now is bring up somebody who has graced our Executive War College podium in the past in our November San Antonio conference. And Stan Lefkowski is the Director of Artificial Intelligence and Data Management at LabCorp. He's here for an important reason. He's going to talk to you about how LabCorp is using artificial intelligence in about every facet of operations, workflow, data collection and analysis, digital pathology, research. He's going to give you an idea of what your lab's going to look like in coming years. And then speed of adoption is what will judge how your lab begins to incorporate these kinds of things in the way of patient care. So come right up, Stan. I think you're going to find this fascinating at how LabCorp is changing the patient experience, improving workflow through the lab, and at the same time advancing diagnostic excellence. Did I say that well?
Very well.
Okay.
Thanks, Robert. So, actually, I do want to correct you on one thing. This title was, Robert said, would you like to come and speak? And I said, sure, what do you want me to talk about? And he said, well, this sort of thing. I said, okay. And then I looked in the program and said that this sort of thing had become the title of my talk. So I want to replace it with something simpler. So I'm going to talk about what we're doing at LabCorp with data. This is me, Stan Lefkowski, born and raised in Canada, came to the U.S. for education, ended up staying. And for the earlier part of my career, I was focused on AI. I got a PhD in AI, some postdoc work, some consulting work. But around that time, the beginning of my post-PhD life, AI was going through a bit of an eclipse, and bioinformatics was just getting born. And I found a lot of opportunities that kind of pulled me in the direction of bioinformatics. I started my own company, ran it for a number of years, was on the faculty at Johns Hopkins running the genome database there, and subsequently led bioinformatics organizations at a number of different companies, ultimately joining LabCorp almost 9 years ago. And then about 3 years ago, my boss, the CIO at LabCorp, Lance Berberian, came to me and said, we need an AI strategy, and I understand that you have some experience in that area. So on top of the bioinformatics portfolio, I now had an AI portfolio. And the question that we had to face is, well, what does that mean? What are we going to do with AI in the context of a diagnostics business? So the last 3 years, it punctuated with that pandemic thing, has been an exercise in trying to operationalize that mission. So I don't think I really need to tell this audience who LabCorp is, but just a few numbers that I want to highlight on this slide. One is the 160 million-ish patient encounters per year, which generates a lot of data, right? Big numbers, big data. 65,000 electronic interfaces to providers, 5,000 diagnostic tests on the menu, 2,000 patient service centers, 6,000 in-office phlebotomists. And that's on the diagnostic side. And then in 2015, we acquired Covance, so that got us a foothold in the drug development industry as well, the CRO business and testing for clinical trials. And in that capacity, we've supported clinical trials in over 100 countries and been involved in the development of nearly all of the top 50 drugs. So we have scale, clearly. Scale can be good, can be bad, right? The challenge with scale is agility. We aren't always as fast as we want to be in making moves. This can be a restraint. So our challenge, and I think I'm kind of proud of what my team has done here, has been to develop a level of agility within this much larger juggernaut. So stepping back and thinking about the evolution of clinical lab data systems, kind of taking an IT focus over the basic workflow of getting a specimen, running a process on it, generating a report, getting that report back to the physician, at a certain point, And we started attaching databases to that. So it's useful, we can keep track, we can amend it, correct the reports, and so on. But it was almost an afterthought, ancillary to the main process. But there's been realization in recent decades, and you know, Jason alluded to the importance of big data in driving machine learning, that there's value above and beyond what we initially thought in that data. It's not just to get back that one record, but what can you do with the whole collection? So we've been pursuing this vision. Wouldn't it be great if we could use that laboratory data in addition to doing our day-to-day operations to improve patient care, to find operational efficiencies for ourselves and our clients, and to advance the science? So I'll give you examples of how we've been trying to do this. And it turns out that LabCorp has been just a great place to do this because we have the data, those millions of diagnostic test results. We've been able to build up, I think, a really impressive team of data scientists, master's, PhD level people, AI people, about 15 as of this moment, growing. And we also have the advantage of subject matter experts across the organization in all therapeutic areas. And I want to emphasize that everything I'm going to talk about today is the work of other people, right? And just fantastic contributions from across the company. We have access to the same high-performance computing resources that everybody has now. So anybody can get an account on Amazon, have access to supercomputing capabilities, machine learning tools, state-of-the-art, available at the push of a button. So we leverage that in all sorts of ways. And we have our existing delivery channels, which allow us to take whatever we innovate and put it in, embed it in this much larger organization very efficiently. So thinking about how artificial intelligence evolves kind of at the highest level, or was thought it was going to evolve, was we would go from calculators to laptops to HAL or Siri, right? And, you know, when was the last time you had a conversation with Siri? We're not there yet. So instead, I think what we're seeing more is an evolution of a network of intelligence, taking the network of computation that we had already created and adding little bits of intelligence throughout. And that's kind of the approach that we're trying to follow. So the bits of intelligence that we've been exploring so far include machine learning, machine vision, natural language processing, and data mining for making use of real-world evidence for insights. So I'll talk a little bit about each of those. On the machine learning front, Jason mentioned, you know, there's these different types of machine learning. Most of what we've done so far has been in the area of supervised learning, where you tell the system up front, this is a dog, this is a cat, and ask it to learn a rule that will distinguish between them, or this is a cancer cell, non-cancer cell, et cetera. So we've used that in the clinical applications by taking our large collection of test results, and we can take a test of interest or a disease condition of interest, but lately we focus on taking a test and say, divide the patients into two groups, cases and controls, ones who are positive for the test, ones who are negative for the test, and get all of their patient histories and ask the classifier to learn to tell them apart by their histories, not by the test results, you know, but learn a rule that given a patient history will predict whether it's going to be positive or negative for that test. And we measure the performance of that using the standard area under the curve, which is 0.5 on the right. If you can't distinguish at all between the positives and negatives, it's 1 if it's a perfect discrimination, and in between 0.5 and 1, you get, you know, typical performances, where 70 and up is considered pretty good. So we've built a tool that embodies that. We call it LabCorp Predict, and we've trained it on a number of different disease conditions, starting off with relatively common chronic diseases. So here you can see some ROC curves for chronic kidney disease, which actually leverages the bottom two EGFR and ACR scores. And you're seeing predictive accuracies, area under the curve scores, in the mid to high 90s there, which is really quite good. And then for NASH fibrosis, we can predict in the 80s, which is also quite respectable. So what do you do with something like that? Well, we've been focusing on applications in three different areas. One is population health management. So if we're working with a health provider, they're trying to manage and optimize care for, you know, thousands or millions of patients, we can provide a risk score to those patients, saying what is the probability that your patient has NASH or CKD or other conditions. And they can operationalize that by saying, okay, we better test those patients or approach them, you know, through a care coordinator and make sure that we can keep them on a positive track. We can use it in clinical trials to impute missing information to suggest this patient may not meet the inclusion criteria of the trial as far as we know, but we can guess that maybe they do because we've run this predictor on it. And finally, clinical decision support. If we have a channel where we can talk directly to the physician, then we can deliver this information and say, hey, you know, there's a significant chance that your patient has CKD. Might want to consider ordering a test. So some examples of this, in the last capacity, the clinical decision support, we've built a system, and this is part of an effort by the IT organization, not my team in particular, it's a much larger project, to develop a tool we call Diagnostic Assistant, which is a configurable dashboard over the EMR. So it's invocable from Epic, Cerner, all the major EMR types. It's in the Epic Orchard marketplace. And it can, the physician can configure views of a patient's data, and more generally views that they like in their practice, and it can show trends. This is a mock-up, not real data. But it shows the kind of visualizations that it can generate. And if we add in the predictive piece, then we can start taking those trends and extrapolating them forward in time and predicting what will happen in 3 months, 6 months, a year, and so on. On the clinical trial front, we did a partnership with Lifeline Screening, which is a company that has mobile vans that it goes around to try and screen for various disease conditions. Then they were very interested in NASH fibrosis. So we were able to take our predictive model and generate a map of the likely hotspots of NASH fibrosis. We did a pilot with them in San Antonio. We're able to get from our database of 80 million patients, 5,000 contactable patients in that region, sent them an email. 54 patients showed up. 38 of them had confirmed fibrosis after giving the test, and 13 of those were referred for biopsy. So big win. The people involved in clinical trial work were just ecstatic about these numbers. So we can also use machine learning on the operational side. Some quick examples. We've been building models to predict employee turnover. What is the likelihood that a phlebotomist is going to quit a patient service center in the next 2 weeks? We've got lots of data. We're doing a pilot where the regional territory managers are using these scores and seeing if they can drive interventions to improve retention. We've taken all our data on clinical trial bids and whether those bids were successful and led to an award or not. We have, you know, thousands of these examples. And we built a machine learning model based on that. So the new trial is input into the model. It's got a variety of components that have been learned to be predictive. The model produces a score, 39% predicted probability of winning. And unlike some sort of black box machine learning algorithms, this one gives you, we use what's called explainable AI to make it very clear to the user what are the features that are driving the score in both positive and negative directions to give you that final result, so it's interpretable. Some other ones that I won't go into in any great detail include a fraud detection tool for a drug reimbursement program that has been very successful in identifying people who are very likely trying to defraud the system. Benefits verification for patients in the diagnostic lab. Free cash flow forecasting for finance, and primate health prediction for the research part, the early development part of the drug discovery pipeline. So moving on to machine vision, one of our earliest forays into this area was to address a mundane problem, which is somebody walks into a patient service center, they need to provide their health insurance information. Normally they would go to a receptionist, provide all those details. Now they just walk up to a scanner with the aid of this thing, and slap down their card. And unlike credit cards, which have a fairly standardized format, insurance cards are highly variable from one provider to the next. This thing can cope with that and can be regularly updated to improve its performance. In pathology, obviously Jason is much more of an expert on that. We've done some work in this area primarily by partnerships with companies that are active in that space, feeling like it's too big a problem for us to attack with a group of our size. So we've concentrated our internal work elsewhere and worked with partners. But the problems, I think everybody's aware of, the shortfall between supply and demand is starting to become apparent to everyone and will only increase as the cancer rates increase, the number of modalities that we expect to extract from a given slide increases, so the workload per sample goes up, and more pathologists are retiring. So we've done a collaboration with PathAI on PD-L1, and we're able to get to manual pathologist equivalent scoring on that for a counting application. And the kind of vision that I think is starting to coalesce in our minds to some extent about where we're going in the future for pathology is that if you think about the separation of technical and professional components, as we move into digitization and automation and driving costs down on the technical component, there are economies of scale there. And scale is something that we know a little bit about. So I see us, and this is to some extent a personal view, as focusing increasingly, and we've done some proof of concepts in all of these, building demonstration labs that illustrate these, that we will focus on that technical component and really try and provide a high-quality service to the professional component clients. So the things that can migrate to the back end include the sample processing, the digitization, scanning, the storage management, the delivery, and even the use of modular plugins to annotate the images so that the pathologist can benefit from that, get a high-quality technical product that's interpretation-ready. Since their goal has to be, if they want to grow or improve their revenue, they have to be more productive. And so our goal would be to make them more productive. So on the natural language front, we found a number of areas where we can leverage natural language processing in our various areas of interest. One of the first of these was we tried to build a COVID-19 registry using our testing data. Relatively early, the first year in the pandemic, we started this. We partnered with a company called Sciox, which has since been acquired by Datavant, and they specialize in retrieving medical records. I always have to stop myself from saying electronic medical records because they're pre-electronic. They get the PDFs, they get the papers, they scan them, whatever form it is, may or may not be electronic. But they were able to provide the clinical data around these patients that LabCorp had tested with PCR for COVID. And we built up a 30,000 patient registry with clinical data and analyzed it for correlations between COVID positivity and subsequent results. So in order to get the information from the medical records into the analysis pipeline, we needed to build a natural language processing pipeline to analyze and extract information from the medical records. Related application that leverage some of the same components, we operate these call centers for pharmaceutical companies that do safety case reporting. So phase four, looking for adverse events. And so an important triage on those incoming reports is what drug is it about? What was the patient's condition? Was it a positive or negative response? And we start with the kind of text on the left that's what we call free-range human vocalizations. Not at all obvious what it means or how to translate it into some kind of structured form. So we've built an NLP extraction engine, and this actually was very successful in helping us win a significant contract. We've also applied NLP to clinical trial protocols to extract the inclusion-exclusion criteria, which we can then turn directly into queries against our database to identify patients that may fit the conditions of the trial. So then last area I'll talk a little bit about is data mining, using our test results as kind of a body of real-world evidence to try and gather insights that can be publishable and scientifically useful, clinically useful.
One of the first of these was to look at our chronic kidney disease data. So it began with somebody asking, hey, in the state of Arizona, how much testing of a certain type goes on? And we took that question and we said, well, if we're asking it for Arizona, it's just as easy to ask for all the states, and it's just as easy to ask year by year. So we started to generate a heat map showing rates of testing, and then started to relate that to the guidelines that specified what testing was appropriate for people with various pre-existing conditions like hypertension or diabetes. And then that grew into, well, we can now estimate rates of compliance with guidelines from this data. So we published a paper about this in Diabetes Care. The main observation was that there's still a fair gap between the chronic kidney disease testing that goes on in at-risk individuals and what the guidelines recommend. And the picture on the bottom left is a Sankey diagram, which I'm increasingly intrigued at the possibility of using representations like that to visualize patient journeys at the population level, because that's really what's being illustrated there. And there's a lot of people in the medical literature who have used this visualization tool to kind of move beyond single patient journeys to population level. And as we move into more precision health, AI-driven precision health, and so on, you can think of our goal as being moving people from the bad paths to the good paths. And this data gives us a view of which paths are being taken in a given population in a single diagram. So I think there's a lot of potential there. We've been looking at our allergy data. We have tens of millions of allergy test results, which we've been slicing and dicing by geography, by social determinants of health, comorbidities, and we've presented some of this data at Quad AI, the main allergy conference, and we have a few manuscripts in progress right now, hopefully submitted soon. We've published a number of papers based on mining our COVID data. We've done both antibody and PCR testing at scale, and we can correlate those things with our other variables that we have on those same patients. Oncology is an area of great interest internally within the company, and when we tried to do the same kind of data mining on our oncology data, we ran up against an obstacle that the data was distributed across all these different companies that had been acquired at different times, and their LISs had not been fully integrated, so a lot of valuable data was still living in the LIS side and not in any central repository. So we embarked on this enormous multi-year ETL project to bring 70-odd different LIS systems into that single central repository, make it accessible. And that has started to pay dividends. So, for example, when FDA approved Lumakras with a KRAS G12C mutation as a requirement to get that drug, we were able to say, you know, how many patients do we have that have non-small cell lung cancer and have KRAS testing? How many of those were positive for KRAS? How many of those positive had the G12C mutation? 600 patients identified in a matter of hours that would have taken many weeks or months in the past. Similarly, a company we were talking to, Julie, was interested in HER2-new tested patients and with breast cancer in the U.S. We were able to rapidly put together a visualization of where those patients are, and they're potentially, you know, contactable if they've consented to talk about inclusion in a clinical trial. Increasingly, we're also aware that specimens are data also, and we're finding research uses. So we built, this is a user interface for a query tool that can leverage the clinical data in the data warehouse and identify specimens, remnant specimens, before they get destroyed that may have valuable research purposes. And we've done a number of collaborations with the CDC in the course of the COVID pandemic to leverage our specimen flow, for example, to do population level surveillance of COVID antibodies in the seroprevalence study, to do sequencing, viral sequencing of our PCR positive specimens, to find serum from patients who had who had been infected with a known strain as identified by our viral sequencing program. So we sequenced the patient. Months later, a serum sample shows up from that patient. We now know something about that patient's serum because we know what infection they had when, and that goes into an R&D pipeline to try and develop neutralizing antibody assays. We've done some work with outside collaborators who've been interested in this capability as well. So sort of looking ahead, where is all this leading? If we go back to our picture of lab testing workflow and data flow, we get the data exhaust. I've shown you how we can use that for machine learning purposes, generate insights, and how we can potentially feed those insights back to the physician on the lab report or through our other delivery channels. And as we start to put that in place, physician behavior starts to be affected by that. And we get the possibility of a kind of cycle here, hopefully a virtuous cycle where we can learn as we go around this. Which brings me back to the different types of machine learning that I discussed at the outset. So I described supervised learning, but increasingly I think there's an interest within the healthcare community about the potential of reinforcement learning, which was a less well-known methodology. But it's intriguing because it is, unlike the others, it's fundamentally a type of learning that's embedded in some kind of active behaving system. It's incremental. It has to learn as it goes. It's active because it has to drive decisions and have an impact on the environment. And it's goal-directed, meaning there's some objective that it's trying to achieve. So in healthcare, the goal would be optimize care, minimize cost. So you can imagine embedding reinforcement learning into our lab data flows. And I think that's the intriguing possibility that's emerging over the next few years. This is not something I made up. There's a community that's working on this. This is a sample of Google hits of papers that were pulled, 6 months ago. And there's talks out there that you can find. It's an active area of research. So in summary, the picture of the future of AI and healthcare that I offer is not so much how as this virtuous cycle of reinforcement learning at the level of the whole healthcare network, which will give us the intelligent network of the future. So in summary, from my viewpoint, where I sit in the industry and in LabCorp, it's very clear that AI has entered the IT mainstream. We're finding all sorts of use cases for it. They're limited only by the imagination, and we are applying methods across the enterprise for this, and we're committed to continue investing in this technology. And we're always interested in partners who want to collaborate with us, especially the ones that bring challenging problems. So I want to thank a fragment, very incomplete list of contributors to what I've shown you today. And you folks, the audience, for your your attention, and the organizers for inviting me.
Well, thank you very much, Stan. Let's give him a nice hand. We've got a few questions for Stan, and I'd just like to point out to you that you can see the multiple dimensions that you could put AI to use in your labs today with the right amount of resources. And so one question we have in is, in building the program to identify the biomarker with KRAS as an example, what is involved in changing the parameters to identify other such markers?
So it's not, I wouldn't call it a program, it was a database query. The hard work was getting the data from the many places it was hiding into a single resource, and subsequently, as the phase we're involved in now, is curation. So we have a team of curators that is raising the level of the data quality, because if you want to find lung cancers, where did they put lung in the report? Which field? It varies by test, varies by lab. They may say lung, they may say bronchial, they may say alveolar, they may say LLL for lower left lobe of lung, all sorts of things. So you have to straighten that out, and that's been the big investment. Once you do that, you just go up to you write a SQL query, or you put a front end on it that allows the user to point and click or fill in a few fields. Just say lung, KRAS, G12C. If you want to change the parameters, you put in other values.
Very good. In applying artificial intelligence to lab workflow, are there certain of the IVD manufacturers who are, should we say, further along with helping AI solutions work with their instruments? Like the Roches and the Sysmexes and the Siemens
and the Beckmans. I missed the question.
So if someone's in the lab wanting to use AI on their workflow,
yes,
and data's coming out of the instruments, are some of the IVD vendors a little further ahead in applying AI than others?
They're definitely vendors who are very focused on this. And almost every vendor will say they have AI, because you pretty much have to these days. But I think if you look at them, you know, some are more serious about it than others, and there are some that are very good. I don't think it's a race like one person is going to figure this out. We're all trying to figure this out.
So I was wondering if there's some natural allies. If your lab wants to go down the AI path in operations, are there some friendly travelers that could help you?
There are. I don't think I'm prepared to name names.
You could do that on a sidebar conversation.
Yeah. But there definitely, there's a lot of good companies out there, Agile. And
that's the point of having Stan here. There are things you can do in your lab today to move that ball forward using AI. And then a related question is, in your experience, what would be the best enhancement to the patient experience in a lab if the lab applied AI to that specific area? Ooh. You know, you mentioned patient ID, for example.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. I would need, you know, if I had 2 hours to think about it, my answer might change. But off the cuff, I think what we're trying to do with the LabCorp Predict, in other words, be able to say, you can think of it as a tool for identifying gaps in care, right? So the best thing I think we as a community can do for patients is get them focused and with their doctors on their problems as early as possible. And if the predictive models can help the doctor and the patient recognize that there may be an issue early, that's probably the best favor we can do for them.
Yeah, and that's a very good answer. It's being proactive at helping the doctor close the care gaps. And even without AI, many of your labs know where the care gaps exist with certain patients. And it's like every population of physicians, some have more care gaps than others, which is the variability in care. Let's give Stan a very big hand for a well-done presentation.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This concludes the presentation. Mark your calendar for next year's Executive War College to be held April 25th and 26th, 2023, in New Orleans.